right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, April 30th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday. One more day to go. Just so you guys remember, tomorrow is the May Day Marathon that we will be simulcasting here on UCY.TV starting at 8 a.m. Eastern, 5 a.m. Pacific, and it runs all the way through until midnight Eastern time. I think the last segment is a roundtable that starts at 11 p.m. with all the guests. There's going to be quite the extravaganza with speakers. If you give me just one second here, I can go to the page. If you go out to the UCY.TV website, you will see that along the top of the menu bar, there is a link there called May Day Vaccine Marathon. We have their chat for the show embedded there, our player, because it'll be streaming through our network, and then I have a list of guests. The archives will be archived there as well, so I don't know. We'll have to figure it out. I'm not sure if I could do it via half hour. If not, it'll be per the hour, but I'll see. I got to do that after the show today, get that all set up. But it looks like we are going to have a bunch of great people. April Broden, make sure you guys show up and give April your support. She is going to be interviewed, not the interviewee, at 11:30 a.m. Eastern. Dr. Tenpenny's on at 2:30 Eastern. There are a bunch of lawyers, I think I mentioned that yesterday, talking about vaccine injury compensation and that type of thing. And Mike Adams, you know, despite what you think of Mike, like I said, Mike Adams has a huge following, so hopefully he's going to help this group get a lot of visibility for this event. And Mike Adams is on at 10 p.m. Eastern. So anyway, it should be a good marathon. That means that I have the day off tomorrow, as does Josh and LaVon. We all are being preempted gladly. It'll be nice to have a Friday off. But the Vaccine Truth Marathon is actually something that is extremely important. I mean, you guys know like how rabid I am over this coming forced vaccination. And that's kind of where we're going to kick the show off today. I forgot to give you the time and temperature. The time is 10:04 a.m. Eastern time is 59 degrees and overcast. It looks like it's going to rain here shortly, but the weather's getting warmer every day, and that makes Jules happy. I don't know. It's so much easier to wake up when it's like 60 versus minus 5, you know, for those of you down south. I don't know. There's some of you. I was surprised at how cold it gets down south sometimes, but definitely up here we had more than our share of cold weather this winter. All right, so make sure you guys stick around tomorrow all day from very beginning of the morning until we go to bed. It is going to be a marathon, so that should be good. Where I want to start today is taking a look at a story that I ran across late last night. And actually, yeah, we don't even have to look at yesterday. Yesterday was I put an image in for the show, your utopia, my dystopia, and that's exactly how it goes. All right, anyway, there was a story that caught my attention late last night, just before I crashed out, that I think Heather Callahan had done a story on it back a few days ago, but I guess I didn't realize exactly what the story was about until I saw the CBS News expose. And what caught me was the way the article was titled. And we had done a show on this, so I was already fully aware of this new version of this inoculation coming out. But I was so disgusted when I was done reading this, I didn't even have any words to express my disgust. So check this out. CBS News releases a story yesterday titled, and if they didn't stick this stupid survey thing in my face so I could read, women who received HPV vaccine may need another shot. And I was like, well, you know, if you had looked at the recommendations on that Gardasil vaccine, because I know I did when I did the research to rant about it. They were recommending multiple injections to, quote unquote, keep your child safe. But the way they spun this, it makes it sound like it's just routine. Yes, well, maybe you need to get a booster, an injection, but wait until you hear this shit. And remember, the HPV vaccine, when we dug into it, and we did at least, I know I did one show that I ranted about it, but there were at least two or three shows that we dug into how that HPV vaccine works. And it's using virus-like particles, synthetic viruses that are loaded with nanotechnology. Wait till you hear this. So back, let's see what the date is, because I dropped it. Oh, it was probably 2 months ago. I had an episode called New Gardasil 9, FDA, Plum Island in Kansas. And I'm sure that if you've been a listener for a while, you definitely remember that one because we stitched a whole bunch of that crazy shit together about how the FDA is, you know, all the FDA fraud. Plum Island is our quote unquote not having a biowarfare program, but it really was in kind of secret. Kansas moving that Plum Island lab to the heartland. And then this new Gardasil 9 vaccination that when we read the insert, the side effects are like way, way, way worse than the original Gardasil vaccine that protected against four strains of HPV. But what was really shocking, like I said, is the way they spun this in the story that now your child might need to get another vaccination and how low the numbers for HPV actually are for unvaccinated. And I asked that from the very beginning. I'm like, how the hell does not every single girl I know that grew up between the 70s and the 90s not have HPV then if it's so prevalent in the wild? You know what I mean? You know, cervical cancer, and this is what they're saying it protects you from, cervical cancer still is not a very large segment of the population. And like I've mentioned, most women go and get their yearly pap smear, which detects any type of abnormal cell changes. If there ever should be a vaccination for some sort of female cancer, it should be ovarian cancer, which has no signs or symptoms or tests, but no signs or symptoms until it's in like stage 3 or 4. And then you're in deep shit. But to come out with some sort of half-baked vaccine for venereal warts that they say, if they get into the cervix, could potentially cause cervical cancer, maybe. On the flip side, this is using synthetic particles, injecting them into your child, first generation, and your child has now become an unwilling guinea pig, or willing, because a lot of parents, I mean, I had friends, man, they ran their teenage daughters into the doctor's office to go get that vaccination because, oh my God, I don't want my daughter to get cervical cancer. But are you kidding me? Like, how many people do, and I know there are people who get cervical cancer, so I'm not saying that it's not out there, but, you know, if I look across the population of everyone I know, how many people do I know who, let's see, died from cervical cancer? Well, none. How many people do I know that had maybe abnormal pap smears? Yeah, I know a few. How many people do I know that came back with abnormal pap smears that it ended up being a false alarm? Most of them. How many people do I know that had abnormal pap smears that were not anomalous through mistakes or whatever that ended up with beginning stages of cervical cancer? None. How many people do I know in my past that had venereal warts? One. How many people do I know in my past that had venereal warts that had them treated? One, and they were gone. So, you know, like, I mean, all these from personal experience of people that I've known, In really digging into this topic, this is like the chickenpox vaccine in my eyes. I mean, yeah, you're not going to die from chickenpox, though you could, ancillary infections, absolutely, from anything. But it's something out there that was never a problem really to begin with. yet we have this newfangled treatment to take care of it that really isn't doing anything more than making you a pincushion and then allowing the pharmaceutical companies to sit there and wait and see what happens. Well, guess what? This Gardasil vaccine was one of those let's wait and see what happens. So they've now run into some issues. Titled, Women Who Receive HPV Vaccine May Need Another Shot. Women who receive the human papillomavirus, HPV for short, vaccine, may be more likely to be infected with a certain high risk strain of the virus than women who do not get the vaccine, according to a study. Now let's read that again. So everybody make sure they understand exactly what I read and what I understood. Women who receive the HPV vaccine may be more likely to be infected with certain high risk strains of virus than women who do not get the vaccine. So basically they're telling us, you know, they make it sound like you need a booster in the title, but in the first paragraph, basically they're telling us that if you got the vaccine, it's now more likely that you're going to get the even worse strains of HPV than people who didn't get vaccinated at all. Holy shit. I'd be fucking suing these assholes, honestly. So, all right, let's read a little bit more. The findings suggest that although the vaccine is effective in protecting against four strains of HPV, which, yes, it was the Gardasil 4, women who received it may still benefit. Now, listen to the way they spin this. May still benefit from getting another recently approved HPV vaccine that protects against 9 strains of the virus, the researchers said. So that paragraph almost sounded like, well, you got the old one and it only covered you for 4, but we got this new one and now it covers you for 9. So maybe you should get the new one so you're covered across the spectrum. But it doesn't say, like it did in the first paragraph, that if you got the first vaccination, that you're more inclined to get these more horrible HPV infections. All right, let's read a little more. Quote, vaccinated women who got the quadrivalent, which that's the original, the 4-strain vaccine, may get the 9-valent strain, which is the new one. And I noticed they don't mention it way down at the bottom. It's called Gardasil 9, people. We read about that extensively. They may get the 9-valent strain vaccine as further protection for them, says Feng Jian Guo, a postdoctorate fellow at the University of Texas Medical Branch and one of the researchers on the new study. Guo noted that this is not an official recommendation. And though when we read the insert for the Gardasil 9 back a few months ago, it did say that even if you got the 4, you could get the 9. So, I mean, he's saying it's not recommended, but it was listed in the literature. Would I trust the literature? No. They want you to be a guinea pig. Line up and get round 2. Guo noted that this is not an official recommendation and that more research is needed to confirm the findings. Currently, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention recommends that girls and young women ages 9 to 26 get any HPV vaccine to protect against cervical cancer, and some strains of HPV have been linked to cervical cancer. And yes, remember, we had also found out that they're recommending it for boys. And when I questioned my daughter's pediatrician as to why on earth they would make little boys get this vaccination, she told me that it would prevent them from getting anal cancer in the future. All right, back to the story. The new study was presented this week here at the meeting of American Association for Cancer Research, and it has not yet been published in a peer-reviewed journal, and we all know how much we trust those peer-reviewed journals. For the new study, Guo and his colleagues analyzed information from nearly 600 women ages 20 to 26, including 80 women who had received the original Gardasil HPV vaccine, which protects against four types of HPV, type 6, 11, 16, and 18. There are many types of HPV, and some can lead to cervical cancer if the body does not clear the infection after many years. So do you hear the way they word that? Like, it's possible it could cause it, and it could lead to it if the body doesn't get rid of the infection itself. HPV types 16 and 18 cause the majority of cervical cancers. Women in the study who received the Gardasil vaccine were indeed less likely to be infected with the four strains of the virus included in the vaccine. And wait until you hear these numbers. So if you are vaccinated with the quadrivalent for the old school, the old style Gardasil vaccine, 11% of vaccinated women were infected with HPV 6, 11, 16, or 18. So even if you got the vaccine, the Gardasil, the four strain Gardasil, still 11% of women got infected. But then they compare it to 20% of women who got it with no vaccination whatsoever. Now, I don't know about you, but I was pretty good at math. If 20% of women got it in the general population with no vaccine at all, and it said just above that, you know, there are only some strains that cause cervical cancer, and that's only if your body doesn't get rid of the infection itself, which apparently is possible. 20% of women get HPV. It doesn't say 20% of women get cervical cancer. 20% of women get HPV. But if you go through getting the vaccination, still 11% of the women get it. So what is that? That's only a 9% win. And then 9% of not necessarily causing cancer. To me, this is a big fucking crock of shit. When I saw those numbers, I'm like, are you kidding me? You would put your daughter or your son, per CDC recommendations, on a guinea pig table without any research historically done over a generation or two to see how it's going to affect fertility or cystic problems in the ovaries or anything like that. You're going to put your kid up there as a sacrificial lamb and part of the freebie R&D budget. It's just unfathomable to me. It says, however, the women who did receive the vaccine were more likely to be infected with other high-risk HPV strains not included in the vaccine. Now, here's some significant numbers. About 61% of women who received the vaccine were infected with the more dangerous high-risk type of HPV. 61% of the women who got the original vaccine were infected with the worst kind of HPV. 61% compared to 40% of the women who did not receive the vaccine. That's a 21% increase. Now, that is a significant number. Guys, I would be, and I know class action lawsuits, and we'll actually tomorrow in the it looks like the 8:30 a.m. slot and the 9 a.m. slot, we're going to be talking about Vaccine Injury and Compensation Board, and then the lawyer's hour is at 6 p.m. Eastern. So those might be really good hours to listen to see what the current laws, rules, and regulations are and how effective it is to actually try to sue or prove. But I'm telling you, if this is coming out in research and this Guo, is that what his name was? Guo. His research is either going to get shut up or he's going to have an unfortunate accident if this gets out there too far. I mean, is that not a lawsuit waiting to happen? So you just now exposed my kid to these more dangerous forms of HPV because they stepped up and believed in your Frankenscience vaccine? It says about 61% of the women who received the vaccine were infected with another type of high-risk HPV compared to 40% of women who did not receive the vaccine. HPV strains are considered high risk if they can cause cellular changes that eventually lead to cancer. So pretty much what he just said is that the kids who got the first Gardasil vaccine are now at risk for actually getting the strains that cause fucking cancer. Lawsuit. Sue the fucking shit out. I mean, honestly, when I read this, I would be so pissed if my kid got that vaccine. And I really hope that every fucking parent that put their kid on that table to get that vaccine starts calling the doctor, screaming to high heaven. I would be a psycho banshee right now. Anyone that believes that they should trust their fucking doctor's recommendation to go pincushion your kids should be questioning that advice right now. They have been selling the shit out of this vaccine all over television. And grabbing the parental heartstrings and trying to make you feel so fucking guilty that you're not doing the best for your child. If they didn't get this, I saw my friends go through that with their kids and they got it. They got the vaccine. You know, and let's not even talk about all the adverse events that happened after kids got the vaccine with the narcolepsy and the deaths. And I mean, that one Sarah Stoudemire, I think her name is, that comes on Truth or Talk. She is very vaccine damaged from the Gardasil vaccine. There's quite a number of interviews with her. You could look those up on the UCY YouTube channel. After the researchers took into account factors that could affect a person's risk of HPV infection, including his or her number of sexual partners, the women who received the original HPV vaccine still had about a 40% greater risk of becoming infected with a high-risk HPV strain not included in the vaccine. And here's the money shot. It is unclear why the vaccinated women were more likely to be infected with other high-risk strains, the researcher said. Well, maybe it has something to do with the Frankenstein science that you're doing, manipulating their fucking immune systems. The new findings suggest that women previously vaccinated against HPV may benefit from a new HPV vaccine called Gardasil 9. Q3 profits are lining up to be nice. Make sure you step right up. We got to boost those profits for shareholders. Gardasil 9, which protects against the original four strains plus five more strains of HPV that cause about 20% of cervical cancers, the researcher said. Gardasil 9 was approved in December 2014 for women ages 9 to 26. And if a woman is already infected with HPV, the HPV vaccine cannot eliminate this infection, Guo noted. Younger women and girls who have not acquired an HPV infection would benefit most from this new vaccine. Yeah, you know, here's another thing. If this is such a fucking problem, then why don't we come up with a way to get rid of HPV once somebody gets it? I don't know, guys. I'm telling you, my blood pressure is up right now after reading this. I mean, this is in your face, blatant. And there's not going to be a peep. I'll guarantee you there's not going to be maybe a blip, but not more than a blip. Because the new study looked at women at one point in time, the researchers could not determine a woman's risk of going on to develop cervical cancer. So they, you know, however, previous studies have found that the HPV vaccine lowers the rate of precancerous lesions in women who are vaccinated. Now, what study is that? Whose previous study? Is it one of the ones that was never redacted and found to be incorrect by the FDA before it was published? or while it was published. Who knows? Nice ambiguity there. Studies that follow women over time would be needed in order to determine women's risks of developing cervical cancer if they were vaccinated, but were still to become infected with the high-risk strain of HPV. So it told you right there, we have no research. You are an experimental pincushion. Line right up because we don't have the studies, but hey, we're going to scare the shit out of you and tell you that there's all these horrible things out there. And whoops, whoopsie. Our fault that we've now put your kid at risk for the even worse HPVs out there than what we are injecting vaccinations into them to prevent before. The new study, quote, highlights the need to continue to pursue additional strategies to control HPV infections, says the deputy director and chairman of the Department of Gynecological Oncology at Roswell Park in Buffalo, who was not involved in the study. We need to remember that there are more than 80 HPV types, and some of them can still be associated with the risk of cervical malignant disease. Future vaccines could even include more strains of the virus. Based on these new findings, this deputy director, Ode Sundai from Roswell Park, in his opinion, states women who received the quadrivalent vaccine should probably go get the 9-valent vaccine. Dr. Shashkikant Lele, clinical chief of gynecological oncology, also of Roswell Park. That's messed up. Actually, a friend of mine works in that department. I should find out what his thoughts are. Said that he would like to see the new findings replicated because it's not clear why women who were vaccinated with the quadrivalent vaccine would be more prone to other HPV infections than women who had not received the vaccine. That does not make sense to me, says Lele. But see, the thing is, they're using virus-like particles, synthetic biology, and they're going in and manipulating your immune system. And as we found out in any of this other stuff that we've done, looking at RNAi and synthetic things that are injected into us and what they do in the little nanobots for your immune system, what we found out is that we don't know as much as we like to think we know about how processes in the human body work. And when you flip a switch in one area, it causes other areas to go haywire. We heard that yesterday when we read the story about all the embryos that were discovered in the Chinese lab that they'd been mixing with animal DNA. Isn't that what they were doing? Or in the Chinese lab where they just... Actually, I think that was the UK lab, it was the animal DNA. Because those were the chimeras. In the Chinese lab, they were just modifying different genes in the embryo, but a very large number of them didn't quite work out. But it's because you start flipping switches, it affects other things. We don't understand at all. We like to think we do, but we don't. In addition, it is not clear whether women who received the quadrivalent vaccine would benefit from the 9-valent vaccine. So studies, yes, line up your kids. Studies need to be conducted to test this hypothesis. What do you think of them apples? I just could not believe it. It's already got my eye twitching. I am going to drop this into chat for anyone who didn't see it. I will find Heather's article too. She did an article probably about a week ago or so. All right, so staying on the theme of infectious pathogens, we've talked a lot about that. There are a couple other things I wanted to bring up. Out of my End of the World on One Page source, RSOE out of Romania. I haven't been out there in a long time, but they do fire out alerts now, which I used to have to just go to their website and look at their global map with all the flashing emergencies on it. RSOE put out an alert back 2 days ago It's an event report. It says there is a new mosquito in town. It is an aggressive and relentless biter called the yellow fever mosquito, and it has vector control officials worried. So it's a new mosquito in town, aggressive and relentless biter. Where have we heard that before? Didn't we hear that in Florida? Like knives stabbing through your clothes and attacking dogs and fish as well. The size of pterodactyls. Remember that one? Says vector control officials worried, but not for reasons typically associated with mosquitoes in Orange County. This one happens to be in California, people. Though this type of mosquito is capable of transmitting West Nile virus, just like here in New York State, we have West Nile virus, it is more likely to carry such debilitating tropical diseases. Now, hold the phone. First of all, I love the way that they seem to find these new variants of insects and know everything about them, even though they're brand new. And California, you know, I've talked about this before. We're seeing like these quote unquote outbreaks of disease. And in a whole bunch of these stories, they're now blaming them on climate change, right? That was the dengue that appeared in Japan. First time in 50 years, and it's because of climate change. Well, check this out. Though this type of mosquito is capable of transmitting West Nile virus, it is more likely to carry debilitating tropical diseases in California, such as dengue, chikungunya, and yellow fever. It was detected last week for the very first time in Orange County. Vector control officials said on Monday, though it has popped up and around California, including Los Angeles, in the past. So there you go, people. Now you got to watch out for dengue. I don't know. Chikungunya. I call it chikungunya. Dengue, chikungunya, and yellow fever in California. Is that not psycho? I don't know. Color me crazy. But have we had lots of yellow fever in California in the past? Here, I'm going to drop this one too. That's the RSOE. Alert. And there was a third one. And this one struck me as somewhat amusing, if this wasn't just so damn sad. Hold on, I gotta find it. Officials were warning. Here we go. Officials were warning. And I think I might have mentioned this in chat, but I don't think we did it. Oh, maybe we did it at the very end of the show. Let's read this though. This was like the icing on the cake for 2015 year-end profit results. Make sure we have more officials in the House and the Senate to become millionaires by the end of this year. Out of Global Biodefense, titled, As Ebola Recedes, Threat of Measles Now Could Potentially Become a Crisis in West Africa. The African countries most affected by Ebola outbreaks. And like I said, when we first did this story, now that we have all the experimental vaccines being pumped into humans all over Africa as part of the experiment, Ebola doesn't matter anymore because they made their profit until the next outbreak. So we had to come up with something else. Wink. Well, hey. All these Ebola affected countries could now be highly susceptible to a measles epidemic. Yes, just after we had the quote-unquote measles epidemic here that struck fear in the hearts of every sheeple parent and pretty much started the bloody anti-vaxxer fight over Johnny's spoiled trip to Disney World. No, actually it was Disneyland in California. That petered out quickly, so now we got to make sure that we find a place to get rid of all of these overflow of measles vaccines, because apparently it didn't turn into a pandemic in the United States. Due to severe health disruptions in healthcare systems caused by Ebola, including the closing and public aversion to clinics and hospitals, these areas have experienced a dramatic reduction of routine procedures, such as measles vaccination. Researchers at Princeton University and Johns Hopkins University. Johns Hopkins has that whole brain database of children. Studied the West African nations of Guinea, Liberia, Sierra Leone, where the Ebola outbreak was most intense and is still active, having nearly killed 10,000 people and infecting more than 24,000 others. A potential measles outbreak in those nations, the researchers found, could result in an additional 2,000 to 16,000 deaths. Yes, and we sure established how fucking dangerous measles is. I mean, yes, ancillary infections, encephalitis most certainly can kill. But the large majority of people who actually got measles before the vaccine or got measles after the vaccine, like I did during one of the outbreaks in the late 80s, early 90s, where they said that the original measles vaccine really wasn't that effective, didn't die from it. Could result in an additional 2,000 to 16,000 deaths after 18 months of initial healthcare disruption. Prior to Ebola and after significant vaccination campaigns, all three countries only reported 6,936 measles cases from 2004 to 2013. Still 7,000 measles cases in the vaccinated. That's a pretty high number. Even if it is over, what, 9 years, that's still a pretty high. That's almost, you know, little under 1,000 a year. Of course, we'd have to look at how many bazillions of people that was, but that's still a pretty high number, at least in my personal opinion. If vaccines were so great, then they should prevent all disease, right? Saki Takahashi, first author and a Princeton University graduate student of ecology and evolutionary biology, said that the report is intended to draw attention to the growth and impact of measles susceptibility. Oh my God, killer measles, and encourage vaccination by governments and health organizations. Yes, encouraging vaccination by governments is something that seems to be going around. Large-scale vaccination campaigns in countries affected by Ebola are likely to be key to staving off potential measles epidemics, said Takahashi, who began the work while in the research group of corresponding author Justin Lesser, a Johns Hopkins assistant professor of epidemiology. So we already have all these clinics that we sent our troops to these African nations to go build, to go treat Ebola, that then we found out that the majority of those clinics were left empty. So, I mean, who knows if we even still have troops there, because I don't know. I saw just recently they had put, I believe, Sierra Leone was back under martial law for more Ebola outbreaks, where they had everyone stay in their houses for like a week at a time. But how interesting is it that we have all these military clinics now built that nobody's using, and all of a sudden now the measles epidemic needs to be nipped in the bud in Africa because we don't have vaccination rates up. So, hey, it's going to become the next pandemic and kill. It's such a sack of bullshit. They have a surplus of decoding. They have a surplus of vaccines that they need to get rid of. Africa's the easiest way to make some profit and get it into people. And hey, research and development budget goes to zero because now we can try out all of our newfangled ingredients on these people that put an X for their informed consent. It says, quote, the negative legacy of Ebola could be minimized by deploying vaccines and other important health public health interventions, said Takahashi, is about preparing for collateral damage resulting from Ebola. And even after the threat of Ebola begins to recede, there is the potential for other infectious disease crises. Reports from Ebola-affected countries found that numerous health care facilities were closed or devoted to Ebola treatment, while people also stayed away from hospitals and clinics to avoid contracting the virus. the unintended consequences were not only a drop in measles vaccinations, but oh no, also a reduced polio inoculation, the unavailability of treatment for endemic conditions such as AIDS and malaria, and a reduction in prenatal care. Guys, this is just beyond, oh, I'm starting to feel dizzy now reading this. So we have now lining them up. Measles vaccines, polio vaccines, AIDS vaccines, all those new ones that they've been working on, and malaria vaccines. Bill Gates, didn't he buy the production facility? And prenatal care. Wow, aren't we doing all kinds of crazy shit with embryos? I mean, I'm not saying, but I'm just saying. This smells a mile away. Quote, the focus on Ebola was clearly necessary to control the disease and options were extremely limited, but it is unfortunate that attention and resources were diverted away from routine health services, such as childhood vaccination. Saad Omar, an Emory University associate professor on global health, epidemiology, and pediatrics, said that the report importantly puts a number on the extent to which diseases such as measles can proliferate after a crisis. These pathogenic consequences, be they due to an outbreak, natural disaster, or war, are especially important to consider in poor nations with weaker healthcare infrastructures, which, of course, we have to send our military in to fix. Omar said that the incidences of outbreaks following a societal trauma are established in Pakistan, for instance. Yes, remember this? Polio cases jumped following severe floods in 2010 that displaced millions of people and disrupted vaccination campaigns. And if I am not mistaken, that whole Pakistani polio outbreak and inoculation had some interesting things that happened around it. There were lots of kids that got sick, I believed. Hold on. Let's see. I am pretty polio surge in Pakistan. Pakistan's polio problem and the vaccine danger. So they went after them in 2010, and it appears that 2014 is the worst year in a decade for polio infections, and this was after they did a mass inoculation. But I thought there was a story that there were lots of kids who died from that vaccine. I remember I was pretty certain that that was polio deaths. As deaths mount in Pakistan, ending polio becomes an act of courage. I don't know. We'll have to look that up. I know they were killing polio vaccine workers, but I was pretty certain that there was something wrong with that vaccine that they gave those kids. I'll have to look it up, though. I'm not finding it right now. All right. So poor Africa is going to become the pincushion of humanity, just like India and any of these other countries. I mean, Pakistan, obviously. I'm sure they probably went after some of the other Middle Eastern countries. But I also saw that who got included, and we'll have to see if it's here, who got included as potentials for a new measles outbreak, but Canada. And I don't see that story here either, so hold on, we're going to have to find it. Global update, travel health notice, Public Health Agency of Canada, April 16th, 2015. Measles outbreak in Canada, here it comes. So, you know what? The rest of the vaccines, that were left over and hadn't gone to Africa also went to the Canadian socialized healthcare system. On April 17th, California health officials declared the large measles outbreak that began last December in Disneyland over. Yes, the one that ruined Johnny's vacation. But the outbreak remains active in Canada, where its persistence highlights the looming risk of measles return in the United States. All told, the Disneyland measles outbreak infected a whole 147 people in the United States. 131 of them were Californians. This was a big outbreak, one of the largest in recent memories, according to the CDC. 147 people is a big outbreak. Sounds more like a localized outbreak. And again, it has never been shown to me that they ever swabbed the measles strain and determined whether or not it was the wild measles strain, which would mean that it came from unvaccinated children, or if it was the prophylactic measles strain that's in the vaccine. Two very different strains of measles. To prove that it was, you know, because they were blaming it on the unvaccinated kids. Well, prove it. That's what I say. Prove it. Says it was a big outbreak, one of the greatest, largest in recent memory, and greater still if you include the infections that spread to Canada. Quote, the measles outbreak is twice as big as you thought, reads the headline in Forbes, in which Tara Haley traces the outbreak spread north of the U.S.-Canadian border. When this article was published on March 12th, just over 100 cases. All traceable to two families that visited Disneyland in December, yes. Again, like they found the tree the infected fruit bat lived in Africa. All traceable to two families that visited Disneyland in December had been reported in the Lanaudière region of Quebec. Today, the number of cases in Quebec linked to the California outbreak still sits at 159, exceeding the U.S. tally by 12. A spokesperson for the Quebec Ministères de la Santé et des Services Sociaux tells IO9, which is a publication I'm reading this out of, that the outbreak has affected a total of 28 families in the Lanaudière region. And most recent of these 159 cases was diagnosed on March 28th. Health officials in Quebec consider a measles outbreak over when no new cases have been reported for 32 days. That is not a typo. The all-clear sign is issued 10 days earlier in Canada than it is in the U.S., at least until April 29th, which was yesterday, the outbreak will still be regarded as active. But that's Canada, you may say. In the United States, the outbreak is over. Well, yes. But how does one define an outbreak? Oh. More importantly, how does one convey the agreed-upon definition of an outbreak to a virus like measles? California health officials declared the Disneyland measles outbreak over on April 17th because no new cases linked to the outbreak had been reported in the United States in 42 days, a timeline determined by doubling the infection's 21-day incubation period. Interestingly, when we had the quote-unquote Ebola outbreak and they said the incubation period was like 21 days, they were only putting them into quarantine for 21 days. And then it came out that it was very possible that the incubation period was quite a bit longer, like 40-some-odd days, yet they never altered the quarantine period. Do you remember that? I still call bullshit on that one. That whole thing was very odd. Now we're seeing the fruits of the Ebola labor. Lots of profit. And lots of new experiments. I don't know. Do we read any more of this? I'm just looking. So look out. The persistence of the Disneyland outbreak in Canada makes it easy to imagine an even worse scenario one in which the chain of transmission does not stop, but ramify, establishing roots in unvaccinated communities across the U.S., resulting in the outright loss of that country's elimination status. Oh, be afraid. Those anti-vaxxers need to all be hung. And this is a mainstream publication, and that's pretty much what they're saying. It's all your fault, anyone who questions what we're trying to feed you. I just closed that story by mistake. I'll find it again. Oh, there was another one, too, that came out on the 23rd. You know, we've been looking at all these weird contagions. Southport, Indiana high school students and staff exposed to tuberculosis. Big tuberculosis outbreak up there. I haven't seen an update on that since. But I mean, don't you see TB typically in hospitals and especially like VA hospitals and old folks' homes? What the hell is TB doing in a high school? Symptoms of TB, an airborne disease caused by bacteria, include bad cough that lasts for more than 2 weeks, chest pains, fatigue, fever, night sweats, chills, weight loss, and loss of appetite. And that almost sounds like that lung plague we all had in December and January. And then actually someone in chat was telling me they just had that lung plague. Symptoms may not appear immediately if someone has been infected, but it will come to light if that infection develops into active TB. That bird flu, too, is spreading. I saw yesterday, I didn't post that story, but it spread to a whole bunch more farms in Iowa. And here's another one. Actually, this title, maybe we should play this for comic relief. I don't know. The show's almost over. This title, one person dead, 20 sickened after killer church potluck in Ohio. They had botulism in the church food. I mean, botulism is something that you can easily get by not properly refrigerating. But still, look out for that killer church potluck, because it could do you in. I mean, one person literally died from it. I never got to get to the mad science gone mad stuff, so let's hit this last one. I briefly mentioned this the other day in the same publication, and of course this is about the Department of Defense, and it's not loading. In that one publication, Global Biodefense. Oh, come on. Well, we're going to have to skip this. Damn it. The page won't even load. Oh, look, we can't find it anymore. I think I read this anyway. It was about the DOD going after some World Health Organization locations in Africa and what they wanted to do. Yeah, no, it won't load. And what they wanted to do was to get their hands on the virulent materials that those labs had been holding to add them to the large database of virulent materials that the Department of Defense was holding to do some more research on them and look at them. And, you know, what got me with the DOD getting involved and kind of stepping in on the World Health Organization, I was like, wow, isn't this just like such a happy little butt patting club? Here, it finally opened. DOD award, Emerging and Dangerous Pathogens Laboratory Network. March 18th, this is from. The DOD's Critical Reagents Program has announced intentions to procure laboratory assessments on 5 World Health Organization Emerging and Dangerous Pathogen Laboratory Network locations in Africa. This assessment, so who knows what quote-unquote assessment fully means, but this assessment includes transfer of cryo vials. So those are the ones, remember, they had the Ebola vaccinations that they were putting in sub-zero temperatures to keep them viable in the heat of Africa. This assessment includes transfer of cryo vials of clinical material to the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Disease for evaluation and accessioning into the Unified Culture Collection and assay performance data for the Critical Reagents Program Polymerase Chain Reaction Assays and the CRP MagsPix Assays from the testing of clinical materials in the freezers at these locations. So they apparently have been doing research and keeping, I mean, I don't really know what this means, but they want the samples that have been locked in the World Health Organization cryo freezers at 5 highly pathogenic laboratories in Africa after the Ebola outbreak. These locations include the Center for International Research in Gabon, Uganda Virus Research Institute, the National Institute of Communicable Diseases in South Africa, the Institute of National Biomedical Research in the Republic of Congo, and the Pasteur Institute of Dakar in Senegal. The intended contractor is Foundation Miru of Washington, D.C. A firm fixed price, indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity type contract will be issued for 1 year with a 2-year option period to extend the laboratory assessments, whole genome sequence data on clinical materials contained in the cryovials, transfer of clinical material contained in the cryovials, and assay performance data. So it means we need to make better Ebola viruses for the next outbreak is what it sounds like to me. We need to do a postpartum on what we had, what worked, what didn't, who died, and how virulent it was. All right, guys, the show is over. Remember, no before the first cup tomorrow. It's the May Day anti-vacker marathon. Make sure you stick around. Tonight is Thursday night. Chuck Ocelli, we got next. Next is Post Ignorance with Kevin Blanch. Chuck Ocelli live at 6. Behind the Woodshed, this week's show with Hal at 8. Double Cross with Drew and Chuck and Anti-Media with SWU.